Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I'm your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here today with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Oh, hello, Judy. Hello, viewers and listeners. Judy, tell folks the title of today's podcast.
Commitment, Aging, and Spirituality, an interview with Carol and Jay Casbon.
And we've just finished that interview, and they're doing really fascinating stuff.
They really are.
And what a project it was. It took them 5 years.
Wow.
We didn't happen to mention that in the interview, but I was reading that beforehand. And they interviewed, 13 different couples.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're not just talking about, well, let's sit down for an hour and interview. They sat with them for 3 days.
3 days.
And got 6 hours of interviews from each one. Anyway, they talk about their work.
Mm-hmm.
It is very spiritually based work, but they're trying to do it in a way that isn't like a specific, you know, it's not specifically Christian. They are Christian, but it is not specifically Christian.
Right.
But it is, we found it very, I found it, I think you did too.
I do too.
Very, very interesting and meaningful.
Yeah.
So we nice hope
stuff.
You'll check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Before we do that, we've got our fun stuff to advertise, so let's go ahead and advertise that stuff.
Okay. So why don't we start by talking about the book that started this podcast.
Which actually came up a little bit in the interview today, as a
yes,
matter of fact.
Yes, it did.
I always like that when that happens, purely coincidentally.
Purely coincidentally.
Yes.
But that is Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
And that is the book where I took the 7 words of our podcast formula, Be
right?
Kind, Don't Panic, and Have Faith, structured the book around those 7 words,
mm-hmm.
covered a whole bunch of topics having to do with relationships, and I think it's a darn good book, and by golly, you should buy it. So you can get it anywhere books are sold.
That's right. And
various
formats. Paperback, Kindle, audio,
audiobook.
And you do the narration in your lovely dulcet tones.
Well, thank you kindly.
It's
I will
nice
return
to
the compliment in a little while when we talk about our sponsor.
Okay, then we have your latest book, It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy is Wrong.
And that is my more recent book,
mm-hmm.
Also available in those 3 formats,
yep.
and also, by golly, a darn good book.
Yep.
So do check that out as well.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of booklets
and we
that
have
are
your
more
mini
recent.
Books.
Yep.
Because they're not quite as long as the other ones. The first one is My Husband Complains About My Cleaning. What Do I Do? Hint, it's not about the cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
And 7 Words to Jumpstart Your Love Life.
Yes, and the 7 Words to Jumpstart Your Love Life, that one. Great book that is. Really nice read.
Mm-hmm.
And you can buy it. And gee, if you want to have that paper copy in your hands, go ahead and buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to have a paper copy in your hands and print it yourself, I will give you... for free, a PDF that has all the pictures and everything. And all you have to do to get that is sign up for my newsletter, Dr. Chalmers' newsletter. And you can do that
by going to ctin7.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's CT, the initials for Couples Therapy in 7, numeral 7.
CTN7.com, and that will give you a magically appearing box that will let you sign up for my newsletter. It's a monthly, roughly monthly newsletter that is just fun stuff. I hope you will do that. And that also is a yet another way of giving us feedback, which we always like when people want to do. Now, we have, of late, we have a sponsor, a delightful sponsor. So let's talk about the sponsor.
And that would be The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
Mm-hmm.
Available in paperback, Kindle, and audiobook.
Narrated by my lovely wife with
Yours
her lovely
truly.
Voice. Yes, exactly.
Yes.
And it is a delightful book and a very spicy and sexy and enjoyable book.
Mm-hmm.
I speak from experience. I've read it.
What
can
yes.
I tell you?
Filled with tales. Oh, you know, we should... They have the stories, sexual stories involving Lilith and Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you don't know who Lilith is,
read the book.
Read the book.
Yeah, and you'll note that when it says Erotic Tales from the Bible, Lilith, that word, the name Lilith, does not appear in the Bible,
mm-hmm.
but it does appear in what is known as Midrash, which is a Jewish term referring to stories that sort of expand on what is in the Bible, kind of fill in the blanks, so to speak. And what Laria did with his book was basically sexual midrash.
Mm-hmm.
So those of you who know what midrash is, if you find that an intriguing concept, yet another reason to buy that book, available anywhere books are sold. You will see floating above our heads in this little commercial segment.
If you're watching.
If you're watching, yes. Here it is if you're not watching. LariaZilber.com. That's LariaZilber. LariaZilber.com. That will take you to a nice page that will entice you, I'm sure, to be very curious about that book enough that you will press that button and go to Amazon and buy it. By golly. So please do that. And so, without further ado, let's get on to our interview.
Our guests today are Carol and Jay Casbon. Carol Casbon is a poet and writer, author of books and programs dedicated to exploring the inner life. She also works as an interfaith minister and spiritual director and has led retreats for over 25 years with educators, clergy, and congregational leaders, healers, and hospice workers. Jay Casbon retired in 2016 from a career of leadership and teaching in higher education. Much of his work entailed leadership positions, including 13 years at Lewis and Clark College as Dean of Graduate Studies. Jay also worked internationally as a consultant and visiting professor and led cadres of international university students on European excursions, teaching religious art history. Married since 2001, Carol and Jay live in Santa Barbara, California. Their recent book is Side by Side, The Sacred Art of Couples Aging with Wisdom and Love. Carol and Jay, welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words.
Thank you so much.
So of course, we're having one because your work is interesting. I guess we say that to all the folks, don't we?
Well, we only have interesting folks on.
That's right. So could you, just to start off, could you tell us, how did you get into the work that you do? In whatever level of depth you want to go, but you know, tell us about your own journeys.
In relationship to this actual study that we just completed. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we were in the process of retiring, and it's such a big transition in life and one that doesn't get all that much attention. And obviously couples start spending a lot of time together in retirement. And we were really curious about what was going on in the lives of couples. And Jay had a dream one night that we should go on the road and interview couples and film them. And originally we were going to make a documentary, but that morphed over time. Anyway, and so when I got up, he was waiting for me and he said, "Carol, I know what we need to do." And I said, That really lands. That's so exciting. Why don't we call it Side by Side? And that's what we did. So we bought an RV. We took several years to do the project. We didn't just do 1-hour interviews. We spent 3 days with each couple.
Oh, and my. Wow.
Yeah. We lived with them. We have 6 hours of film for each couple, which we transcribed, which became the basis of the storytelling in our book. We told the 13 stories of the couples in the book and what they had to say about the three topics of aging, committed relationship, and spirituality, the intersection of those themes.
How did you find your couples?
Want me to keep going here?
Keep going, yeah. I'll jump in.
We have been a part of a community called the Center for Courage and Renewal, based on the work of Dr. Parker Palmer, for about 27 years, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know if you know Parker's work, but he had created a process called Circles of Trust and found that it was a very safe, trustworthy container for having deep conversations around renewal and connection to the soul. And so we have it's now over 300 people, facilitators internationally, that are doing this work. And many of our couples came from that, our friendships that we developed over time. Not all of them, but mainly because there are people that were comfortable telling honest stories in front of other people, which was one of the requirements that we were looking for. We were looking for the soul stories, which are the more nuanced stories, not the hero stories.
That's the distinction you make between soul stories and ego stories. You're going after a soul. Yeah, Jay, please tell us, you know, like,
Well, the other thing I would add, one of the things we found in our project is couples can have different stories about the same events. And we,
of course.
And that's rich. It's been rich for us too. I first met Parker in around 1995, 1996. I was dean at Lewis and Clark, and I invited him to come and work with my faculty. And I was thinking if faculty could start working with more inner depth, we would be much better as a faculty, but certainly much better with students. And it was there that I saw the potential. And Carol and I have graduate degrees in psychology, so this whole area has always been relationships of real interest to us. And at that time, the relationships more were around just what would it be like to have a faculty that knew how to do circles of trust together, and how would that translate into changes in research and teaching? And so I was later board chair of Parker's organization, and Carol's been very involved with them. And so we just drew from that cadre of people that are comfortable about talking about their inner lives in public, mm-hmm. are comfortable about, also skilled in describing whatever it is you're asking them, that they hope to share with you at a deep level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I checked out a couple of the videos, and that was so striking that the folks you were talking to were so clearly adept at that.
Yes.
It's not surprising that, yeah, they've had practice. And of course, they have interest in it as well, to be involved in that sort of organization.
But, you know, it was interesting, too, that when we queried couples that might be interested in being in the project, I would say for every couple that said yes, we had two that said no.
Mm-hmm.
And that really wasn't surprising, but it was too, you know, speaking of mm-hmm. paradox.
Well, yeah. You know, we've been in this soul work and spiritual formation work for our whole lives, pretty much. But much of it has been focused on the individual. Like even in our lives, in our churches, all the programs we've gone through have been focused on individual formation. Mm-hmm. And yet we believe that relationships, committed relationships, where you choose to hang in there through everything, is really a path to spiritual development. And we feel like that's something that has been underplayed in our individualistic culture, if you will. Also, people have not been raised to invest in their relationships. And mm-hmm. we dedicate the book to our therapist and to couples therapists, because it's so weird. We're taught to invest in our careers and our children. And yet the foundation of so much of our lives is in relationship to our partners. And so we kind of want to contribute to the movement of focus on couples, the lives of couples, and enriching them.
Mm-hmm. You know, when we started on our journey with the RV, which was, how many miles did we say? 15,000 miles total, something like that. I mean, it was quite a journey. A little footnote here, Carol mentioned that we were going to do a film. And what happened was the pandemic rolled around, and we just decided, because of the infrastructure and support structure you've got to have to do a worthwhile film, it would be easier to do a book. And then if we wanted to come back and do a film, that would be a possibility. But at the beginning of the trip, as we were driving across the country, I can tell you, in my mind, I was not thinking about myself in terms of relational fitness, you know, in terms of our marriage, or that was something that even we were looking into. I didn't know that we would be going there. But as a result of this project, I look at relational fitness, ours especially, but with the couples that we interviewed all the time. And is there a way that couples can enhance and become more relationally fit?
Mm.
And it's been, it's really been a passion for both of us. And then we realized that we needed to work on our own relationship. And it just felt, in writing about these couples and honoring them with their honesty, we had to take the leap too. Mm-hmm. And one of the great things about being in Santa Barbara, California, is there is a strong community of therapists here. Mm-hmm. And we put the word out, and we were very fortunate. We got a very talented therapist who just jumped in and has been with us ever since.
Yeah, she's great. Theory Jenkins is her name. And we also started studying with Terry Real, who you know about his work. Remember how we found it? I was doing a lot of work on trauma for my own. I mean, one thing that happens when you retire and you slow down is your life starts catching up with you. Mm-hmm. And for me, there's been a lot of shadow work in the last couple of years, individually as well as in our relationship, and it's been tremendously growthful, but not easy.
Mm, yeah, God has also influenced me a lot. Mm-hmm. Getting clear on some of the issues. Mm-hmm. and being able to, you know, the destructive nature of being critical and having contempt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the four horsemen, he calls them. Yeah,
that's right. You got it.
Criticism, yeah. Contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. I talk with folks about that a lot, actually.
Yeah, well, I'm glad.
Four horsemen
of the apocalypse.
We'd like to say we don't do it.
Oh, but we lie. Yeah.
I am curious about, you know, the notion of relational fitness, which I found an interesting, when I looked at some of your materials, I found that an interesting idea. That, to what extent can you, you know, characterize it or define it? Like, how do you know when you see it? You know, what is a couple is showing when they're showing relational fitness?
That's a great question. We also move to something, and I'll come back to your question. We talk about beneficial presence. When you're in the space of another couple and you realize that you're kind of swimming in an area that just has a lot, it feels like you have the wind at your back when mm-hmm. you're having a mm-hmm. conversation. And then I go back, say, how did you get there? And so one of the first lessons we learned in our project was that couples who get to relational fitness and then ultimately to what I think is beneficial presence are couples that do their shadow work. They do their work. And there's an expectation that you do your own work. Mm. And that may, for us and for many of the couples that we interview, it's hiring a third party, getting a therapist involved and going after it. What are the issues that keep coming up? What's this adaptive child, you know, that's running the program? And here we are in our retirement years. And it's so, you know, so we go down to those into that category. And is it possible to start wherever it is you are and to get better in relationship to the person you love the most in the world? Mm. And what do some of those things look like?
Yeah. You know, back to what does it look like, relational fitness? Absolutely what Jay's saying, I agree. And then we found people who are thriving in their relationships know how to practice mutuality. Mm-hmm. And that became a really important word to us. Jim Rogers and Sally Hare, one of the stories in the book, they met kind of later in life. Sally was in the university and Jim was a filmmaker, and he was from the hills of North Carolina, and she had a little house near Myrtle Beach near the ocean. And they had to somehow decide where to live. Mm. And their resolution strikes me as an amazing act of mutuality, because they Sally owned the house, so practically it made sense to stay at the beach house. But to make Jim comfortable, they built this whole section that looks like a mountain cabin. And so walking to the back of the house.
By the beach. That's about the world. Right.
Yeah, that's right. It's surrounded by pine trees and nature. And so, and they really wanted to honor each other's sense of place. And that's how they put it together. And couples, and this is one advantage of aging, because you get to slow down and you have more time mm-hmm. together. You can actually leisurely take more time with your decisions. And in mutuality, each person is able to articulate what they need and what they want. And you get to hang out and listen to those long enough to either find that third way, that, you know, creative addition to the house or whatever it means. And or you also slow down long enough to know, well, I'm okay privileging Jay's need in this situation because it's more important to him than to me. Yeah. And so there's a dance we call, we also talk about the dance of me and we, that as you retire, because, you know, we both had very exciting careers that often took us apart. And now we're together more. So there is that dance of how much together, how much alone. And then when we're together, how do we, you know, how do we achieve mutuality together? So those are a couple things.
And I'm going to add one more that I think is really important. It's welcoming the stranger in each other.
I saw you had an interview with a couple of rabbis on that very issue.
Yeah. And
we're both Jewish and very involved in the Jewish community. I didn't happen to know those two folks. Not like I know all the rabbis in the world, you know, but it was interesting anyway.
They were amazing, and they are amazing people. And we practice Shabbat as a result of that interview. And we've been doing it regularly now for years.
Because we go to the Episcopal Church and worship on Sunday, we practice Saturday night. We took the whole ritual, some from Mirabai Starr. I don't know if you know her work. We literally sit down, we pray for our children and follow the Shabbat ceremony to some, I mean, probably not purely.
We take some liberties.
I would hope so.
you don't have to do it the Jewish way. But the concept itself is really nice.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Lori brought it. Lori and Gary met in Israel in rabbinical school before women could even be ordained. So they're very interesting. And then they're in Portland, Oregon, and they started Gesher, which is called which means the bridge. And they basically ran a ministry for unaffiliated Jews in their home, having people who aren't going to the synagogue coming in and learning the homegrown practices of Judaism. We love them, and we love their chapter. They just became grandparents. And
Mazel tov.
That's right. And we happened to be visiting them when we just learned our daughter was pregnant for the first time.
Mazel tov to you. B'shah tova. You say b'shah tova in a good time. It should, you don't want to count your chickens, but b'shah tova.
So, you know, the notion of welcoming rather than being
a stranger, we got a little off topic. Yes. So sorry.
Well, you know, when your partner comes in with something different and is, and the result in some ways is different, rather than be challenged by it or rather finding a defensive position or seeing something negative or being critical, what happens if you turn it on its head and welcome it? And saying, you know, the therapist actually said to me a couple sessions ago something about Carol and I were into something. And she said, okay, that particular piece that you find annoying, let's turn that around and find it positive. Let's get what in there that makes Carol even more special and more lovable, more adorable. What is in there? And I looked at it and you know what? I found stuff. And it's important, and that does develop muscle capacity, is what I share with my men's group. Men love to have challenges, and when I say, you know, we can become more relationally fit in our marriages, most men don't push back from that. You know, if I were to say, we're going to lean in for you to be more feeling oriented. We're going to lean in for you to using soft eyes to look at the world. I'm going to get resistance, but if I find, you know, we're going to build relational fitness.
That's such a fitness challenge. We guys are into fitness challenges.
You got it.
Relate to that. The thing, you know, we've been together a long time, and when we met, we were kind of at the peak of our careers and really exciting doing all this stuff. And now we're in a really different stage, and that can seem strange. As we develop, we can outgrow old ways. What Jay was referring to, I don't know if you all are students of the Enneagram or not.
I know of it. I'm not trained in it, but I certainly know of it.
I'm in nine, and nines avoid conflict. So what our therapist was saying, well, this is great. Carol's getting angry. Welcome, Matt.
You know, that concept that, the stuff that annoys, it's funny, one of our recent podcasts, as a matter of fact, was based on my thesis that the and I gave it a very modest title. I called we titled that podcast "The Magic Key That Solves All Relationship Problems." A very modest title, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
And so what I enunciated in my grandiose way was the magic key that solves all relationship problems is the capacity to be mildly annoyed. And it relates to that idea that that which annoys us in a relationship that is committed, and I think it's the commitment mm-hmm. is a really big part of it.
Right.
In a relationship that's committed, the annoyances, first of all, they are almost always the flip side of the attractions. Mm-hmm. You know, and you see this in very, you know, simple stereotypical ways with respect to heterosexual relationships. You know, the masculine thing and the feminine thing. You know, I'm attracted to the feminine in you, and you're attracted to the masculine in me, and those are both cause for annoyance, undoubtedly. Mm-hmm. She never annoys me, but I'm sure I annoy her a lot. And so it's, you know, it's like, oh, men, you know, that sort of thing. Or men will say, oh, women, you know. But it's the same stuff that attracts us. And when we have the capacity to be only mildly annoyed, you can laugh at it and enjoy it and recognize, oh, yeah, that's the flip side of all these things that I love. Mm-hmm. And when we don't, that's when we get
pissed off and really angry
and horrible politics.
Right.
You know, it's that sense that it's not just annoyance. It's like, oh, my God, this is, you know, danger, and our amygdalas get going and, you know, it turns into a crisis. Right. So that capacity, you know, to recognize that annoyance is often the flip side of what you love.
Yeah.
I think it's commitment that lets you do that particular little bit of, you know, emotional jujitsu.
No, I love what you just said. I think it's brilliant. Beautiful. You know, mildly annoying. I mean, sometimes I have to think about, is it mildly annoying or is it major annoying? You know, it's
or at least moderately annoying. But
yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
But yeah. It does trigger, you know,
annoyed oneself. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's a wound. It's some kind mm-hmm. of, it's usually in me. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with Carol. And that's how I get back to my work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, which actually, when we do that, Carol also is appreciative of that I'm struggling with this. Mm-hmm. And so rather than being more annoyed with me because I have a struggle in this area and I'm not more developed, it's really quite the opposite. It's we're learning together. Mm-hmm. We're evolving together.
Yeah. It invites compassion as opposed to
absolutely,
you know, mutually triggering your annoyances.
Judgment.
And kindness.
But you often have to, we have an expression, we step in it.
Uh-huh.
We step in it. And that's always the sign that that is where our work is, you know. Mm-hmm. And we love Richard Rohr, and he often says, pain that is not transformed is transmitted.
Mm.
And the triggering, the reactivity, all those things are triggers, just calling to be transformed. And we become like mirrors to each other. Oh, there's our work. The other thing Terry Real says is that we are attracted to our unfinished business.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a great example of that, in that our childhoods have very many similarities, as do, you know, does our wounding. So we're especially good for each other, but not, yeah. It's not always easy.
And you know, I get that concept. We're attracted to our unfinished business. And I often, in my background, before I was a psychologist and a therapist, I was a statistician earlier in I have a master's degree in statistics. You know, my old statistical brain kicks in, and I tend to think, well, it isn't necessarily that we're attracted to our unfinished business. It's just that in any intense relationship, it's the unfinished business that's going to emerge.
That's right.
You know, it's not like I was necessarily attracted to it, but by golly, it's there. So by the fact of it being there, someone super important to me is going to bring that out.
Yes.
Yeah, I concur.
It's likely to bring that out. Absolutely. And so that, you know, the work's going to emerge when it needs to, which is another, that what you were saying earlier about how our emphasis on individual work so often misses the fact that, well, it's funny, we did our previous podcast, actually, we were talking about internal family systems. Are you familiar with that? Dick Schwartz and stuff.
Yeah. Schwartz, yeah. I love him.
Yeah. We're all multiple people.
That's
and
right.
in relationship to other people, it brings out all the various parts of mm-hmm. us. And that's way more, you know, there's a lot more to work with there than just working on myself or you're working on yourself.
True.
It's kind of crowded. Crowded scene.
Our ancestors come in, you know. We have a friend who's fairly psychic, and he was telling us when he goes to weddings, he's you know, he's obviously the people getting married and the families, but he said there are a lot of people there, you know. Coming from all kinds of places, all kinds of dimensions. And of course that's the case. And I don't know, I wouldn't have it any other way, you know, not that I could choose. But what we say is what's in front of you is what's in front of you. And it's an opportunity to make a choice. If you want to go to choice, the power of choice, we think that's one of the human superpowers, to engage or to, you know, we can always stonewall it. We've done that, you know, just sweep it under the rug. And that hasn't worked for us, just hasn't very much for us.
Well, we lived that way for a long time, honestly, in our earlier years.
Yes.
All the things that were emerging were there. We were just powering through. Mm-hmm. And I suspect a lot of people do that when they're raising their kids and doing their careers and the household stage. Right? Most
really, the couples we interviewed, this is the story they would say, they would share. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we do the best we can. That's some of our self-talk at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got this job, I've got these kids, I've got these issues. I just, you know, and there's truth to that, but there's a larger truth also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you call it the sacred art of couples aging. Mm. I like that term, sacred. Can you talk a little bit about why you use that term?
Well, you know, we really wanted to lift up that spirituality is an incredibly important container for a relationship. But we wanted language that wouldn't scare. The world is becoming so secular, and we wanted an interfaith approach. We didn't want to say this is just for one type of person spiritually, but that when we feel that if people have a relationship with something greater than themselves, they don't try to make their partner into that. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. Like I can't make Jay God. He's going to let me down every time. And also the covenant that you establish in a marriage, you know, in Christianity, it's a sacrament. Well, there's a reason for that. You know, this is hard. The relationships are really hard work. So what's going to hold you through the storms and the times? And inviting spirit into our relationship, which we do, we actually every evening get together. We live with a friend, Georgia Noble, and the three of us decided we wanted to create a contemplative home. So we meditate every night, we do check-in, and then we read spiritual texts together just to keep that. We support each other growing spiritually as well as just, you know, sharing our meals and the rest of our lives. So we feel like it's just an important center, if you will.
Yeah, I know Bruce has one in one of the chapters in his book. He has a chapter called Sex, Good Sex, and Sacred Sex. Yes. And the whole art, you know, the idea of sacred sex is that it's not just about sex. It's not just about aging. It's having a higher spirituality to what you do that becomes very powerful.
And actually, and I tie that, as a matter of fact, to another chapter, which is why get married? Because the old reasons for getting married are largely gone.
That's right.
You know, there's virtually no stigma anymore to having children not being married. People can enter into all sorts of contractual relationships. And my pet answer, it fits very well with what you're talking about. My pet answer to, okay, so why get married? Well, you get married when you recognize it's not just about the two of you. It's about something bigger. And of course, yes, in Western religious constructs, it's about God. We're saying, no, this is not just about us. It's about this much bigger sense, which of course is very much a holding environment for working through stuff in the relationship. When you recognize, yeah, it isn't just about us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember, you know, when we got together, I wasn't interested in just living with you, mm-hmm. which I certainly wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get married. And mm-hmm. so did you. And that's been a basis for our marriage as well.
I call this unity thinking, unity feeling. It's when mm-hmm. we start to make connections with our lives and with the people we love, but with our neighbors and our friends and community, you know. And I didn't want it to be religious, spiritual, and to make that distinction. You know, we have Beatitudes. And for a lot of people, Beatitudes is definitely Christian, and they don't understand that a Beatitude is a blessing. Mm-hmm. And it's used in Christian circles, but it's also used in non-Christian circles. But we wanted Beatitudes that would fit the experiences and the content that we were engaging with our couples. And we ended up actually, our publisher, Shelley Francis, really worked with us on this. And she said, we had to rewrite the book. Because she loved the content, but she just had some issues about how we were delivering the content. And so it really had to be rewritten, which was not a happy day for us.
I know that day. I've experienced that day several times. It's an important day, as you know.
It was. And, you know, in all things, there's a hidden wholeness. And actually, the book became better in our view. And one of the things that came out of that was the creation of the Beatitudes. And then it was her idea that we take those Beatitudes, those blessings, and match them up to the couples. And it was something we were playing with, that every couple has an energy signature. And we started playing with it, and it was actually very easy for us to take those blessings and align them with the different couples. And that, and I, that got us to your question about what's sacred. You have to kind of go behind things to get what's the core. And it actually, as a result of interplaying the Beatitudes with our couples, it deepened our appreciation for our couples and for the courage it took for them to be present with us. And then the next step for us was, oh my gosh, can we do a book that will honor them in a way that's honest, really honest and truthful and respectful? And that was a tension that we had. We held all during the project. But then we even saw the sacred element of that too.
You know, and just while we're on the, thank you, Judy, for that question.
Yeah, thank you.
Because I've been realizing people kind of avoid the spiritual part of this book. Everybody we interviewing just don't go there. And of course we don't
go there.
This is real. Thank you. It's so refreshing. You know, the saying where two or more are gathered, there you have a community. And we feel that one of the things we have in our book are spiritual practices for the couples. Just a couple examples. One thing we do, which is I think the most powerful thing, is we'll do a day of silence where we just agree we're not going to talk until dinner, and we go into silence. We don't engage each other, and it just gives us space to kind of deepen. Often on a weekend when we're not focused on working. We have one couple who uses John O'Donohue's poem, A Mirror of Questions, at the end of the day. It's a bunch of questions like, well, what was the best part of your day? When did you get hurt and no one noticed? Those kinds of things. Ann and Tom Butler use this. They are both, he was a priest and she was a nun, and they left both of their...
I saw that interview.
Did you see? They are amazing.
They're amazing. They are. Well, they got married, and that was it.
Yeah, so. We love these people. But anyway, Jeff and Carol Cresswell have been working with Godly Play, and that they're four wondering questions, and so they use those together, and read and journal, and so your home can be a place of spiritual practice. Praying together, contemplation, whatever fits for you. Maybe it's time in nature, but becoming more intentional with that is very powerful. David and Karen do what they call wine time. And they have at 6 o'clock, they have a glass of wine and they do similar practices. They've been reading a book on compassion, and they pray. And so relationships can be a place of spiritual practice, and I think it's sort of overlooked.
It's interesting. I often feel in the work that I do, you know, that question of what makes it sacred, or how do you bring the sacred into it? A lot of bringing the sacred into things is the recognition that it's already there.
That's right.
So when you're open to it, and you know, our 7 words, couples therapy in 7 words, I have it here on a cup. This is a shameless plug for our product. Be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
Good. I love that.
That notion, and they fit together. You know, be kind is what John Gottman talks a lot about. That's it relates to a lot of what Gottman talks about. And you can't do that if you're in a panic, so you have to not panic. And the antidote to panic is faith. And by faith, I mean that recognition, this is not the way I usually say it, actually, but it's that recognition that everything is imbued with the sacred already. We just have to learn to recognize it. And so when I'm working with couples, I've said on occasion, the main thing I offer them is the sense of faith, more than any other of my clever techniques or the clever techniques I've learned over the years. It's much more about that recognition that we're all valid people in this conversation. And that is a statement of faith, that reality is right to be what it is. That's my usual way of, mm-hmm. of describing faith. And that's a recognition of the sacred that's already there. So, you know, that notion that the journey, you know, aging with wisdom and love is a sacred, indeed, it's a sacred art. That makes mm-hmm. a lot of sense.
You know, I've been really influenced by Buddhism, and it's mm-hmm. helped me in my spiritual quest. And so it wasn't too shocking when our therapist told me, Jay, you need to just slow down, yeah. you know, and it was easy for me to get in that space of slowing down when she said it. And I need to practice, become a practitioner of, the sound of Om, if you will, just to slow down. And when I do, what I know is I will see much more about what's going on, and I will feel what I'm truly feeling internally, so I can be more present is the word mm-hmm. that means so much to us, more present to Carol, more present to me. And that's the area that we're talking about. That's the sacred area.
Mm-hmm. One of the things Terry Real says that just sticks in my brain too is behind every complaint is a request.
Mm.
And
isn't that great?
When you think about it, sure. when I'm about to complain, yeah. I actually let her go, okay, what's my... Because when you're complaining, you're not going to get happy results. You know, and so you create the energy that comes back to you, right?
Right.
So, I am thinking, I have to say, I am thinking of Michael Lutz's book called Born to Kvetch, which is a book about the Yiddish language, actually. But it's, you know, kvetching in Yiddish, it's, I mean, it literally means pressing, like pressing a button, but it, never mind the origin, it's kind of a gross origin, but it means complaining. You know, we as Jews, we're a people that complains all the time. That's all the time. So, you know, there's ways of understanding that, but indeed there's a lot of requests in there. Sometimes they're requests of God implicitly. It's like, what are you doing? You know, why are you doing it this way?
Yeah, why me? Yeah,
or if I'm complaining to you, well, again, I don't complain to you, but you have reason to complain to me, much more than I have reason to complain to you. And but it's there's always some sort of implicit, you know, request in there somewhere. But the idea of not complaining, it's like, no, I think I'd have to cash in my tribal membership.
You're thrown out. Yeah. Well, even as maybe as you catch yourself complaining.
Yes, absolutely.
Backing up and go, what's behind this? And what behind do I really...
Yes, the request.
Yes,
yeah, so let's
request.
Get back to your
request. Terry Real said, yes. No, and it certainly is a way of reframing it in a way that you can both express it differently and hear it differently when you're recognizing that sense of, you know, if somebody's distressed about something, if you can be somewhat mindful of your own distress,
yes,
you have a way of being able to get hold of yourself before you dump it all over your partner.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And or before you trigger your partner to dump it back all over you. And that's right. When things get out of control.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the muscle you need in relationships is the courage muscle, for me, at mm-hmm. least for me, because it's really hard for me to intentionally stir up things unless I have to. And something I even do sometimes, if I want to talk to Jay about something that's difficult, is I'll spend time in my journal saying, how can I say this in a way that's both kind and clear and honest? Mm-hmm. You know, and kind of using that nonviolence of, okay, this is what happened. Mm-hmm. This is how I feel. This is the story I am telling about it, and opening the conversation that way versus attacking and, you know, on aggressively. And
you're touching on one of my favorite themes, which is the chief skill of intimacy is the willingness to tolerate anxiety, which is to say courage.
Yes.
You know, willingness to, or as you said, step in it. The willingness to go there, but go there with compassion. You know, it doesn't mean go there and be horrible to your partner. It means go there, but say what you need to say, which is going to raise anxieties on both parts, because who wants to hear a complaint? You know, it's apt to be uncomfortable.
And we found anxiety with many of our couples. I mean, this was something that they knew about. It's just impossible not to have anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, unless there's, if you manage to survive at all, you must have had enough anxiety to not, you know, walk in the street without looking both ways, you know.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Something that Tom and Ann Butler talked about too was in conflict, when his self-esteem is low, their conflict seems to be high.
Mm.
And he's aware of that. And so he turns to wonder, which is one of the touchstones of our circle of trust work, but he wonders what his part is in the conflict. And just being willing to turn the mirror on yourself when you're upset with your partner. Well, what, you know, if you're really emotionally triggered, there's part of you in it always.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of why it takes courage. It's like, if it was just all Jay's fault, I could just say, well, you know, this is your problem, you better change. Well, then I'm worked up about it.
How does that work for you?
Very ineffective.
I just saw a quote. It was Michael Cohen, by the way, a rabbi friend of ours we know, who he wrote an article, and he was quoting Gloria Steinem, who said, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. Yeah. When you have to look at that.
Yeah. And, you know, I think curiosity is so important. Gary Schoenberg, you know, Rabbi Gary talked about, he had this expression, let a question be a quest.
Mm.
And, you know, if something's up, you know, leave room for questing with the questions and for hanging out in that anxiety and that uncomfortableness so that it can reveal itself, you know, the depth of what's going on and not just try to fix it and move on, you know. And again, I think this is just a great age for love to grow because we have the spaciousness to do that.
And I think wisdom, which is an area that I think older people, if we do everything we've been talking about, our inner work, we have the courage to ask questions. And as an old researcher myself, I know it all starts with the question and the quality of the question. And as we develop capacity and to develop those questions that really go to the heart of the matter, this is part of the relational fitness. You know, what are the most important questions we can ask about what's going on right now? So Carol journals, I do some of that. I often just need to take a walk and ponder. And I come back from that with my question or questions. And, you know, I think I can ask Carol anything if I get the question right, if I put the thoughtful energy and kindness behind it.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing what you can get away with.
Now, what did you, after interviewing all these couples and spending all that time with them, was there like an overarching theme or a takeaway, or what did you learn from all the different couples that you spent time with?
It's almost like you need to write a book about that.
What we found was, again, the most thriving couples do their work. They do their own work and they support each other in that. And that hit us right off the bat in something that we weren't looking for, but it came out. That there's an orientation toward we're evolving, that there's movement here. We're never still, we never stop learning. There's always freshness in our relationship. And we have many examples of that with the various couples.
I mean, there's a lot we learned, obviously. Our generation is really interesting. And elders are not being honored and respected, obviously. Mm. And yet the baby boomer generation is fascinating and also hard to stereotype. Even each couple is so unique and what they're doing with their lives. none of these people are playing golf and kicking back. They're all very much engaged still with their callings. Your calling doesn't go away because you retire. You know, your charism still is pushing you in new directions. It just looks different. And it's very, every person has to figure that out. It was just so inspiring to see people pivoting, like with limits. People start asking the question, well, you can't go, if you have a big physical challenge, usually you don't go back to where you were before that. So the question to ask is, well, what can I do now? What can I still do now, given the limits? And then we saw also the couples, many of these people, because they're spiritual, are service oriented, and they're social justice oriented. But like with Marianne and Jim Houston, Marianne is in her later 80s and she had a stroke, and Jim is younger. And so he said, well, I realized I need to bring my service project home and help Marianne more. And I'm really glad and thrilled to do that for her. So people making shifts and adjustments to the changing conditions of aging. And it's really dynamic and creative and challenging.
For instance, with Jim's case, he's bringing more of his service energy at home, but he also finds time to run a kind of a miniature loan group for people who need $50 to $200 loans. Mm-hmm. And he's heading that up in his community. So he's multitasking, but not like he did when he was 35 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a really different energy. And again, it's more towards service to himself, to others, to his wife. They're also spending a lot of time with their families. This is another takeaway for those couples who have families. This is a great time to think about legacy. It's a great time to implement what needs to be done at this point. And also in terms of adult kids, parenting never ends. They're still around and they're watching us very closely. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the questions that we ask couples, you know, how did the deaths of your parents inform what you're thinking about your own deaths right now? And that was a very rich section of findings in the book, those conversations. But also in that is the realization of the couples in the book that their kids are also watching them as they prepare for the next phase of their lives. And a lot of these couples are sharing their chapter in our book with their families. And it's really gratifying for them. One of the Jim, of Sally and Jim, Jim had a period of time where he was estranged from his daughter. And he sent her the book and she read it. And she very much responded with kindness and attention to her father about things she didn't know about their history, about who her father was. And you could tell it meant the world to him.
It's just
a beautiful thing. And it's so unintentional. We had no idea that this dynamic would take place. And it's one of the benefits, I think, of having a project like that. Things happen that there's no way you could plan for it.
And the couples thanked us for witnessing them. Mm-hmm. They just said, no one has ever given us any kind of attention like this. Mm-hmm. And we gave them the joystick with our entire interview to share with their kids. Yeah. So we were hoping, and I think some have, and one of Ross and Paul. Ross died about a year after the interview. She got pancreatic cancer and was gone within a year. And actually at the end of her chapter are her last words. I'm going to cry if I talk about it.
It's a clamped here.
Yeah.
They literally echoed her mother's last words, which we had in our chapter because we wrote about her mother's death because she was so articulate about it. And they had very similar and beautiful passings or transitions.
And to put even more icing on the cake, the section in the book about her last words were transcribed by her daughter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was her daughter's language and words that was in the transcription as she was sitting next to her mother in this whole experience of transition And Carolyn, I can't read that thing without having tears in our eyes because we just see it.
And actually, I think the video on there has, we have some password protected videos that are more personal than the short ones because we're doing retreat work with couples, and that's going to be our book tour. Is we're going to be doing one day retreats starting out in the West Coast, and we're going to go east in the spring, and we show the longer videos of some of these.
So that's a great segue. Let me ask, like, how can folks find out about those retreats? How can they get your book? Tell folks like how to get in touch with you.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Bruce. Our website has everything. Mm-hmm. We spent a lot of time on that, and it's www.sidebysideaging.com. If you just Google our names, Carol and Jay Casbon, you'll probably run into that. Mm-hmm. And on the website are all the links to where you can get the book, you know,
every possible way imaginable.
Possible.
I've seen the website. We will put that in our notes for this episode as well.
Right. And those who are listening, Casbon is Casbon.
Thank you. And then also, if you want to reach out to us, there's a place, just it will go to our email. There's a place, contact them, write us a note. We'd love to hear from you. And we're available for speaking engagements or whatnot.
And I would say to your listeners, if they go to Amazon, they don't even have to go to our webpage. Amazon offers the first chapter, and that's my favorite chapter. So, yeah, I encourage readers to then they kind of get an idea of what's coming.
Mm-hmm. Just one other thing: there is a reader's guide at the back, and for each chapter are questions related to the couple's stories. And the best way to read this book is to read the chapters aloud to your partner or in a small group, and then go back to the questions and just entertain. But how do these themes relate to us? Is there anything here that we can take away? So, you know how we read stuff and it kind of goes in one ear and out the other unless we engage it. So and then there are the interviews online so people can see the couples, read the chapters, entertain questions, and we're encouraging spiritual communities to set up study groups with the books.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Well, thank you. It's a delight.
Wonderful to meet you too.
Nice to meet you both.
Well, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Carol and Jay Casbon and the beautiful work that they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it really is. It's fascinating stuff. And, you know, I didn't mention this during the interview, but I just today happened to be reading an article. I think it was by Paul Krugman, actually, in the Times. Uh-huh. He just commented that, I should remember the time frame. I think it's a relatively short time frame, 10 years, I believe. Mm-hmm. The last 10 years, the population of the United States increased by 7% or so. Mm-hmm. The population of people over 65 increased by 38%.
Wow.
Yeah, that we are becoming an increasing percentage of the population. The population's getting older.
Yeah.
And so, you know...
We live in Vermont, which is, they say, the grayest state.
The grayest, absolutely. Yeah. And so... that is, you know, the work that Carol and Jay are doing becomes all the more relevant.
Yes, it does.
Indeed. So before we close, let us briefly mention a couple things, and then we'll mention our sponsor again. So don't forget about the books that I have written.
Oh, you know, we did not mention.
Oh, we didn't mention our
merch.
Let's clink them together again. Those of you who are only listening and don't get to see our shining faces, we are holding up our beautiful Couples Therapy in 7 Words mugs.
Mm-hmm. Available in 11 ounces and 15 ounce sizes.
Indeed.
With our beautiful logo on one side and our inspiring motto on the other.
Be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
Also available in t-shirts and tote bags.
Tote bags. And I'm pushing the tote bags. They're really...
They're nice tote bags.
Yeah. They're very... I mean, some of the
lightweight, sturdy.
Yeah, really. We use ours. We have a couple of them. We use them all the time. The books I mentioned earlier on, you can go. If you go to ctn7.com, there is a books tab.
Right.
And
the books,
that'll take you right to my website where all my books are.
Sign up for the newsletter. Yeah. And if you would like to be a guest on our show, or if you know of somebody who would make a great guest on our show, or if you have a question that you would like us to talk about on our show, you can go to ctn7.com, and there's a place for all of that stuff.
And I want to mention one other thing, too, I have not been mentioning, which is simply that I've recently restructured my practice. It's a telehealth practice, mm-hmm. and I have some openings. And just throwing that out there, folks, mm-hmm. if you know people who want to work with me, I work with couples, as you've probably figured out, then I do have some openings currently. And so just go to my website, brucechalmer.com, and you can see all the information there about how to set up an appointment with me. Let's put in another word for our sponsor.
Our sponsor, The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
That's lariazilber.com, LariaZylber, lariazilber.com. And so until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.